Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we visit with Mr. Josh Lancaster, president of the Kentucky Corn Growers Association. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hello.
Hey, Jay.
How's David and Vicky today?
I'm good. Fuller than a tick and good to go. We need a nap.
Yeah.
We need a nap right now.
Recording this show just concluded our spring tobacco production meeting and GAP certification for tobacco producers in our three counties. And yep. David treated us all to grilled pork loin sandwiches, which were excellent.
Yes, they were.
Very, very good.
Thank you.
Usually I'm out there helping you, but I was doing other stuff today.
So. Yeah, I just checked out on us.
Yeah. Well, I was in here setting all this equipment.
Yeah.
We all had a hand in something. So.
Yes, yeah. We did.
Yeah. Yep. Mickey made some outstanding desserts, as always.
Very good.
It was really good. I hate that Josh didn't get to get any of that.
Nah, that's all right. But I don't need it.
It was
anyway.
Awful good.
I haven't missed too many.
I'm with you, but it was pretty tough skip out on that.
It was good stuff for sure. Got a guest with us today, Mr. Josh Lancaster. How you doing, sir?
Good. Enjoying this unusual February weather. I don't know if we're going to pay for it before spring, but we're going to take it while we got it.
This show will actually air in April, but everybody in April needs to know we had a couple of good days in February that were pretty nice.
Should have been getting some nitrogen on maybe if you had an opportunity, for sure.
It makes you think about hooking up a planter.
You get down in the southern part of our area, down where David and I live, I promise you that if the ground will hold some sprayers, there's some wheat getting top dressed right now somewhere.
They've been going the last few days. So it's getting that time of year for sure.
And it's always when you have several days of overcast, yucky weather, which we had just, I guess, last week it was just like, I don't even
think the sun didn't even see the sun.
Right. And then when you have days like today and, you know, the last couple of days, boy, it makes you really, really appreciate the sun and
Spring fever, boy, about you in a minute.
Yeah, be ready for spring.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Josh, why don't you start out, just tell us a little bit about yourself. And you are the president of the Corn Growers Association, but you also have an on-the-farm role at a farm in Webster County. So talk a little bit about yourself and your personal background.
So I own and operate a farm here in Webster County, right in the town of Slaughters. A farm sits right off the side of town there. We grow corn. Corn, soybeans. We got some poultry facilities as well. We do quite a bit of tiling and excavating for ourselves. Mostly, we don't do much outside the farm other than ours or rented farmland. So we keep a full crew busy year round. Mm-hmm. We have plenty to do. I came originally from a farming background. Both my grandparents farmed more in the central part of the state, primarily in Meade County, and my parents. I bought a farm across the county line in Breckinridge County, so I originally went to high school in Breckinridge County. I was raised there. Left home, went to college, and realized I probably wasn't going back. I enjoyed farming at home and liked the area, and I farmed some with my cousin up there as well in like the Big Springs Valley area, and enjoyed that, but realized it probably wasn't exactly where I wanted to be in life. And I remember telling my mother, I said, I'm going to go find me a job. I can afford to farm. And everybody kind of laughed at me. So you can't afford to do that. So I went to school at Murray, primarily with a focus on ag mech, mechanization, and done agronomy as well. Took quite a bit of agronomy classes. I really enjoy soil and agronomy and what it takes to really produce a crop. And left there, went to work for Case IH in New Holland in Racine, Wisconsin, right out of college. We were on a trip with my advisor from college, and he asked me some questions, and he knew I was being pretty detailed. And I finally said, who do I talk to that's important in these places we're going? And he said, what are you going to do? I'm going to get a job while I'm up there. And sure enough, I'll never forget meeting the man at the plant where they built the Case IH and New Holland front wheel assist tractors. And we went off to the side and talked for about 30 minutes. And he said, call me at this number later. And I called him. And at 2 weeks after graduation, I was up there at a job.
How about that?
Because he flew me up there that summer. We done an interview and talked and stuff. And I basically had the job as soon as as soon as I was out of school. So I graduated and flew to Wisconsin and went to work.
You know, we hear a lot about the importance of networking while you're out places and meeting folks. But that right there is a prime example of the importance of that.
There was about 15 of us in that group with my college advisor, and I thank him for putting me in a position and being – smart enough, and he knew enough people that made this trip every other summer, so so he knew who to talk
who
to.
Who was your advisor?
Dr. Dwayne Driscoll.
Driscoll.
Oh, we all had him.
That's who he was.
So a lot of thanks to him, and I still think a lot of that man today. So we were in the right place at the right time, but also had to insert myself in that spot.
Yep.
Because there were some people with us on the trip that's like, you think that'll really work? I said, if you want to work, it'll work. You just got to make it happen. And don't get me wrong, when I went back, I had to prove myself. I went through a face-to-face interview with four engineers, and they'd ask me questions, and I had to answer. It wasn't like, fill this out on a piece of paper. It was like they put you on the spot on hydraulics and engineering and electric. And it was the probably most thought-out interview I'd ever went through that meant something. Most of them were just talking. That was a test. And it was neat to do that. I'd done that for exactly 10 months, and I'll never forget, I called my mother and I said, I think I'm going to leave here and come back to Kentucky and farm. And I'll never forget what she told me. She said, just sit down, the moment will pass. that was her reply to me. My mind was already made up. It's already going to happen. I just hadn't told her. Of course, my dad and my grandparents, they all thought it was great. But I had a grandfather that done a lot of close work with Ford Motor Company. He was a... He farmed and worked civil work at Fort Knox on the base. And through that, Ford wanted him to quit and come work and travel for Ford fixing engines, primarily on small tractors when they had gotten big into that, after the 8N, 800s and all that. Right. Well, he could pick out problems and fix them. Ford tried to hire him, and he said, I'm too far into my retirement at Fort Knox. I can't afford to leave. So when I went to work there, he really thought a lot of it. Because he was like, I couldn't do it. I'm glad you got to do it. So it was kind of neat. It wasn't Ford, but Case Nuance was the same company, essentially parent company, so same. And so he was really proud that that happened, but he also wanted me to farm. he understood that too. I had met Lawrence Hust, which our farm's name is L. Hust Farms, and that came from him. And he was essentially a first-generation farmer because his dad died when he was three, and the only picture he had him and his dad was him standing beside his casket. And he knew he wanted to farm. Everything he done was by hand. There was no money. I mean, it was stories of, to get my sow bred, I got to walk it up the road because I can't afford a boar. Right. It was those type, all those. So he had it uphill both ways all the time in the snow.
Legitimately.
And so he worked for everything he had and came from nothing. So it's really interesting the way our farm evolved because he was essentially a first-generation farmer, and I'm a second. But the farm is not far from 100 years old with just two people. So it's really neat to see what he came from. And at the age of 90, before he passed, it was still, what are we doing next? Where are we going? What are we buying next? What's the next big step in ag? Can we make more yield? Can we get more land? Can we buy this farm? There's never a slow point. Never wanted to slow down. And he always told me, he said, if I'd ever quit when the bank told me to quit, I'd have quit at least four or five times. their advice was to sell it and get rid of it. He said that happened at least four or five times.
I bet.
So we have really evolved from literally from two people just going from a by hand, not even a mule, to the technology we have today, which is just absolutely unbelievable in what we can do. So it's really neat to see that. It's also, I'm proud to be able to carry that on, even though it wasn't my family's. I was treated just like family by him and his daughter, and we continue to still operate with that name. We won't change it. It doesn't mean more to me to have my name on it than it does to have his, because that's where we came from. And that's where we're going to stay. That's how we're going to continue. And that is pretty well understood by everybody. Everybody at least understands that, and they recognize the name. I mean, we still travel. He was big into the cattle world. So, I might travel somewhere. I might be in Washington, D.C., and somebody from a wheat board go, y'all still got Red Angus cattle? They'll see the name, and then we got to talk about it for 2 hours. But it's neat to have that history and to see that, because for somebody to come from from literally nothing in one generation and make it that far.
Yeah.
To evolve into what it was. But I came down here to interview with him in I'm trying to think what month it was. I came back down here in December. And I guess I came just 2 weeks before that, so I'd have probably came in November. And when I flew down here, interviewed with him, and we pretty much hit it off right away. It was just a natural fit, and the farming world was, if you can recall, from 2006, corn wasn't worth $4. But in 2007, corn was worth $4. And it was a changing time on the farm for row crops.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, the ethanol had really picked up and was starting to take off, so we had a surge in price and the demand for the corn grew. So it really, from that point on, really changed how fast technology affected the farm. So it worked good with the whole new changing of younger people and understanding of what to do with it. And he couldn't use any of it himself, Lawrence. He couldn't use any of that technology, but he wanted every bit of it. Because he thought, if it makes this farm better, if it makes us grow better crop, then we're going to do it. Yeah, we probably paid some penalties up front for being the first early adopter at times, but we can tell you what not to do.
But that was Lawrence, though. He was an entrepreneur. I mean, back before it was even called that, you know?
Yeah.
Because I have had the opportunity of being from Webster County and working in Webster County. You know, I knew him and got to work with him. And I've heard some of those same stories that you're talking about, and it's hard to really grasp where he came from and what he built.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is hard to grasp that, and the fact that he had was willing to take that risk. That's a risk a lot of people wouldn't have ever taken, you know, and he did, and it's pretty neat to see that, and then just for you to be able to, I mean, now it's your farm and taking that on and keeping that going after he passed away. It's
I mean, his first crops were limited to what he could grow, to what he could do by hand.
Yeah. Right.
So he grew Lespedeza and tobacco because it required no mechanization.
Yeah.
He hired Lespedeza by he harvested Lespedeza by hand. Wow. For forage.
Yeah.
I mean, to think the comfort, because he borrowed money at 13 years old, put out his first crop. Because his mother, I mean, they were poor, they didn't have anything, so he had to take care of his mom and his sister. He had one sister.
Yeah.
And he just took it as a 13-year-old, I got to take care of him.
Yeah.
He still graduated high school, last classes from the big high school of Onton. I think there was, you know, 17 or 18 people in the class or something.
Yeah.
But he was proud that he made it through
that.
And he never claimed to be a highly educated, smart person, but he was to be able to work, take care of a family, and still do that.
But that was at a time when a lot of men didn't graduate high
school. That's right.
They went right to work.
That's right.
At an early age and went any school.
And to be honest, probably if he'd had a little more, he probably wouldn't have finished high school, right? Because he could have been busier. He could have, if he'd had a vehicle, or if he'd had, he wouldn't have had to walk to school. If he had a vehicle, he'd probably went to work somewhere instead of going to school.
That's right.
So there's give and take from both. But it's just an amazing story to hear. And every time I tell it, I think about something different, you know, and never put it on paper, and probably should, just so my kids will appreciate it someday. But
you know, I have a lot of respect for folks that take that kind of risk. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got people today in today's world that take that kind of risk too. But back then, that was very, you know, that was very progressive, because, you know, they just didn't have any money.
That's right.
You know, and so for somebody to take that risk and build the operation that he built over his lifetime, that's really a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
If you compare that to today's standards, we borrow money today on credit.
That's right.
And in those days, you only borrowed money on collateral. It's what you had to put up against it. And that was the risk that you're talking about.
That's right.
Because
that's
if you lost, you sure enough lost.
That's right.
Yeah, lost it all.
Yep.
Yeah. So, well, that's interesting. About how many acres do y'all work now, roughly?
Around 13,000 acres.
Yep. Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot.
Keeps us busy.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I remember when I was working at, and still a crop consultant, and when he came along and Lawrence came in, I just shared this with him before we started recording, but you know, I was talking to him, and he told me, he said, I've hired me a farm manager, I think is what he called you, a farm manager. And he was so excited, and he told me, he said he's really smart. He knows a lot about soils. He talked about how much he knew about soils, and he was so, he was, you know, it was a natural fit, and it had to be a natural fit, or Lawrence would have never, I don't think Lawrence would have made that step, just knowing Lawrence. I don't, you know, it had to be a natural fit, and I think too, you know, I was one of many that got to sit back and watch the changes as after he came on board, and them working together and how things changed and improved. And Lawrence was all in. And I think that speaks of him, but it also speaks of you, Josh, because we've just heard how hard he worked to build this farming operation. Mm-hmm. And then to be able to put that trust and know that I'm going to put this in you and I'm going to let you start making decisions. He had to know that you had that same work ethic he did, that you had that same love for farming that he did, but that you could take it somewhere he couldn't.
Yeah. And it was as big a difference as there was in age between us. You know, he, even at his age and me coming in there at 26, we were both still all in, no matter what it was.
Right.
And we both knew that.
Right.
Yep. And it was, you know, we're here to the end, no matter what it is. If the end's coming, we're both going to be here. And and it turned out to be really good, but we didn't know that. Neither of us knew that was going to be the outcome.
Yep.
And with that happening, it got so much better so fast. Mm-hmm. And it was good to be able to allow him to not really be retired, but enjoy it because he had worked. I mean, the man was still working. He was still up at, you know, 6 every morning and not home till after supper every night in his late 70s.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not healthy for a guy at that age to have that stress and that weight and that burden.
Right.
So to see that kind of fall off his shoulders, we put him in an airplane and said, go where you want and travel. And he did. I mean, he went to, he really enjoyed traveling before, and he got to do that with a good friend, Billy Joe Miles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Him and Billy were really good friends. So he had been to Europe, he'd been to Australia for wheat, and he had done all that. So he was tickled. He always covered his own way. I'm tickled to go, and I want to do it, and I want to learn. And he really looked at it as, I'm going to go learn.
Yeah, he did.
And he kept in contact with a lot of those people up until he died. And and those, the ability to say, all right, you go do what you want, spend what you want, I'll find a way to pay for it. Don't worry about it. You've earned that right. I don't care if you want a new truck, if you want to do something to your house, just don't worry about whether or not it's going to break the farm or it's not, because you've already earned that right.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be, I don't care how I make it or how I do, you can do this. And that was, I understand now, looking back on it more, when I was younger, I probably put more trust in people than I do now. Once you get burnt, you get burnt, the bridge is burnt, you don't want to go back.
Yeah.
But for me, even today, to say, to find somebody that I would trust to do that type of level of work is just so hard.
Yeah. You know?
I know those people, but they're already busy doing it. To find somebody that's not, that doesn't have the opportunity
already doing
that
it.
You can trust is that's a huge step for anybody.
Oh yeah.
And that was his baby. That'd be like me leaving an infant with somebody.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's how important that farm was.
Absolutely.
To him.
Yep.
And you could see that in him every day. Like everybody knew that.
Yep.
So it was really important to try to do a good job. But I mean, he went to Chile. We sent him. He went to Russia. He went. Yeah. He joined these ag tour groups, and he'd just go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the last trip we got to take together, I took him to Agritechnica in Germany. He always wanted to go.
Yeah.
So we got on a plane and went. And it was a tough trip because he was already getting older, and we had to do – I say this. He'd say, I don't know why I go to Florida. It's all just old people down there. He's 83 years old doing this, you know. Like, he's like, I don't know why I go there. I'm a bunch of old people. I don't know what to do. I don't want to go out to eat with these old people. They don't want to go out on the beach. And, but so we made that trip to Germany. And it was amazing to see how much he still cared at that age about learning agriculture around the world.
Right. Because
it was no longer about him. He wasn't there to tell people about what he was doing or what I have. It was, what do you got and what can I get?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what can we get that's better?
Learn. Yeah.
And it was almost like a kid in a candy store, because it would be like, we can use this at home. And then I'd burst his bubble and be like, that doesn't really fit our situation. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I was kind of being the negative Nancy at 20 something years old, and he's the old guy who wants to buy it. You know, it was just, so it was awesome to be able to see him experience something he had looked forward to his whole life. I mean, they'll have that trip every other year, that farm show every other year, largest in the world, and to go from building to building to building and see all that different stuff with him was, it was something I'll never forget.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, since Josh has been here, he's brought on your brother is on the operation working for you now. And, I think your dad still helps you some, or
we can't sort of get rid of him. He won't leave.
Okay.
Dad followed pretty quick.
Yeah.
I grew up farming with my father. And all I can say is the 80s changed our life.
Yep. Yeah, it did a lot of people.
Just like everybody else. Yeah. At that time, he made a decision to sell the farm we lived on. So I still helped granddad and cousin and farmers. Mm-hmm. So I still had ties and ability to farm, neighbors and all that. So it was interesting because now every time we look at it, I thought it was awful. I'll never forget the night he told me he was going to sell the farm. It was devastating.
Yeah. Sure.
Absolutely.
And we continued to farm for a couple few years on the rented grounds. We kept all equipment, but we sold the farm. And then we moved into where he was working for basically a co-op. It wasn't a co-op, but he was still in ag, but we weren't farming anymore. So I just done it with my family, other family, extended family members. And now looking back on it, either I could still be at home. You know, I tell everybody all we did was farm sinkhoes and limestone rock up there. So
I can understand that a little bit.
So I said I could still be beating my head against rocks trying to make a living, or I could be where I'm at now. And if he hadn't have done that, I wouldn't be here.
Right.
Right.
I've never made it to this part of the state.
Yep.
That's true.
I don't even know if I'd have went to college.
Yep.
Because I'd have probably been that guy, I need to work. You know, I need to go. Because I'm a doer. I'm not.
Right.
I thought college was a waste. I thought, you know, I didn't think we need to do all that. And it's probably because my grandmother's probably the biggest reason I went to college. She wanted me to go, and she pushed me really hard to do it.
Yep.
She knew I'd go ag, but she just wanted me to go. Mm-hmm. And if I hadn't, I'd have never met the people I met to end up where I'm at.
Right.
Yes, I learned a lot in college, and there was things, but it was really that networking and relationships that you build.
And that's what it's about, though. I mean, we've said that many times, Josh, on this podcast, is it's the relationships that you build with people in your career. That's what it's all about, because you have to have that if you're ever going to be able to move forward. If you're ever, you know, to be successful, you've got to build those relationships and network with people.
And I tell people today, don't worry about going to a 4-year degree if you don't know what you're going to school for. But if you just go into community college, you're going to tech school, you'll still have those opportunities to build that relationship, and you'll meet these people. Mm-hmm. Then you don't come out of school with all this debt. And you can go right into the job field, make $100,000 a year, and you've got a good career.
That's right.
So I said, don't think you have to go to a 4-year university to do the same thing.
That's so true.
You know, and we're pushing that. I mean, Ryan Quarles and I just had this conversation the other day because of you know, his new role
and
where he is with KCTCS. And I was like, we need to build that system.
Yes.
Because right now it's not really there, but it's very doable.
Yeah. And it's needed.
The facilities. If you look at the facilities you have right up and down this corridor of the state, from Henderson to Madisonville to Hopkinsville, they're there. Yep.
Yes.
That's right.
We just need the right people in the right place
and
get these kids in there. And we can, instead of sending them through 4 or 5 humanities classes and learning about art appreciation, I mean, you got kids that just aren't going to do that. Right?
Sure. Yeah.
They don't have no interest.
Sure. Yeah.
No.
But you've got kids that would love to go on a trip that shows them manufacturing and shows them the industry.
Not only would they enjoy it, there's more opportunity in the trades right now for somebody to start a real life for themselves than there ever has been.
Yeah, I mean, you have it. That's day one when you get out. When you're certified, you can go to work. Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, it's there right now. We joke that those are the kids we want on the farm, but they're not there to hire. You know, we can't. They can't fill the spots. You can't get enough journeymen in any industry right now to have extras.
So they're not there to get.
But if they were there, they would make awesome, you know, farm labor and farm work. Because, I mean, the amount of pay we're having to pay is not that far off from what some of these kids are making doing these other jobs.
Yeah.
And some of them would love to be outdoors on a farm, and that would give them the access. But
yeah.
we got to figure out that pathway.
Yes.
Yep. And that's the trick to it. And I think it's becoming more and more real, and people are realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
More so than they were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And those livelihoods have some constraints of their own, mm-hmm. but they're different. I mean, and I'm speaking from firsthand. I left a factory electrician maintenance job to go to college. Mm-hmm. But I also farmed on the side, and I wanted to be able to further that. I wanted to pursue that. The factory I worked in, we had one window in the back of my mechanic shop that was maybe 10 inches wide and about 4 foot long and had a boiler that said right outside. And if you got just right and looked up, you could see the sun. So that was that constraint. Yeah. You know, I wanted outside. But there's more opportunity in trades jobs right now. And really, people could pick their path. You don't mm-hmm. have to be stuck in a facility.
Correct. That's right. And even the facilities have gotten better.
Lots.
What they've had to do to meet the demands of the worker.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, with inflation, there's been such a rise in inflation along with the labor cost, the labor's had to follow. So mm-hmm. these people are more demanding, you know, about mm-hmm. the days they want off and the, and what they have mm-hmm. to have at work to make them feel good, you know, the feel goods of work instead of the fruits of their labor. Yeah. And I don't do a good job getting into the feel goods.
Yeah.
I'm not a warm and fuzzy kind of person, but
yeah.
You know, if I make you feel warm and fuzzy, it's probably not good.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. Well, on that same token too, college tuition has gone through the roof.
Oh, absolutely.
Four-year degree colleges, universities, and I know it's just part of it. It's just part of inflation. It's just part the way it is. But it has gotten so expensive that if a high school graduate is going to have to pay his way through college, his or her way, you know, a parent's not helping or can't help or they don't have, you know, scholarships – by the time you finish your four-year degree, you've got a pile of debt staring you in the face mm-hmm. before you ever get your full-time job. And that's tough. That's a tough way to start out. And I think that makes that, what you're talking about, those, you know, that KCTCS schools and those mm-hmm. certifications and technical schools, I think that's what is a big benefit too, because mm-hmm. you're going to get your certification, you're going to get a job, and not just a job, you're going to get a well-paid job, mm-hmm. and you may not have debt getting out of it.
That's right.
Because there are so many opportunities for scholarships and things in those fields right now.
Mm-hmm. Sign-on bonuses.
Yes.
Places you're going to work.
Yeah,
there's a lot of businesses that just pay the education.
Yeah,
you go and do it.
That's right. You'll go out and not, you may very well have zero debt and have a job.
I thought I saw one of the dealerships here, tractor dealerships that will pay for your schooling. You get to sign a contract to work for them for so many years. But
I'm almost positive H&R has a program.
Yeah, that's the one I was referring to. Yeah.
I'll say it. Don't bother me. I mean, they have a great program.
I don't know that it should be well known, but I don't know that it is.
It's not well known enough. I will say that. My wife's a high school ag teacher in Henderson, and they had one come in this past year and try to make it more known.
Good.
Yeah. Through sponsorships and scholarships and this.
That's great.
So they are starting to really hunt, but that shows you how bad they're hunting.
Yeah.
For that.
Yeah. That's the shortage
labor
that you see.
Yeah. That is the biggest shortage we probably have in the in the retail world of equipment.
Yeah.
Is the shortage of labor to do mechanic work. You can find the salesman. You can find the parts counter. You can find that skilled mechanic is hard to find.
Yeah.
And it's much like HVAC and construction all of those skilled labor positions are very, very short people wise.
That's right.
But we got they're good paying jobs.
Yeah.
You know, they're a great job for somebody to come out of high school and just go get a pretty minimum amount of schooling and have a good job.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
And then after 4 or 5 years in the field, you may not be an expert, but you'll be very well skilled.
Yeah. And you'll be sought after.
Yes, very much so. Yeah,
you sure will. Yeah. Well, just to jump gears a little bit here, you are taking on leadership roles along the way. And as Jay said in the introduction, you're the president of the Kentucky Corn Growers Association. So tell us a little bit about, you know, your role there, but also you know, maybe how you got started with the Kentucky Corn Growers and kind of some things that's going on there.
So Lawrence, we've talked about him. He was involved with National Wheat and Kentucky Small Grain Growers Association. So he done a lot of work for advocating on the wheat side of things. And at that same time, the staff for the wheat organization is the staff for the Corn Growers Association in our state. So he worked kind of with both groups. You know, he would see both. He never really sat on the corn board, but he sat on wheat and spent a lot of his own time and efforts in Washington, you know, mm-hmm. money out of his own pocket to advocate for the ag world. Mm-hmm. So I kind of seen what it took to do it and what you learned from it. Mm-hmm. And it's something I tell people that, if I missed anything in the world, I still feel like I have a calling to serve. I'm really intrigued about the military mm-hmm. and how it works. And I really appreciate those people that serve in the military. Mm-hmm. Some are called to it because it's the best fit. Some are called to it because they didn't have another option. Mm-hmm. And some do it just literally because they feel like they should. Mm-hmm. And the more I learn about those that did serve that were either in the 101st Airborne or just served as a mechanic in Fort Knox or somebody mm-hmm. that I was fortunate to know a lot. And those people are special in what they were willing to give for what they got. They didn't right. really get anything for it.
Right. No, that's right.
And there was a lot of lives changed, a lot of lives given, a lot of people hurt, and they had no remorse for it whatsoever. They were still proud they'd done it. Mm-hmm. And I don't really have that opportunity. Yeah, I guess I could go sign up and be a Marine tomorrow, but
right.
I might struggle getting through some of the standards, but at this point in my life, but to me, so I didn't really get to serve in that fashion. And at the time I didn't want to, when I was young, I didn't really understand why I even wanted to now, but so it, now I can give back to not necessarily my whole country, but for sure my industry mm-hmm. by giving the time, because some people will go to serve for their own personal reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, it might be their own personal gain.
Right.
I am not there for my personal gain. I'm there. I tell everybody I'm there for my kids' gain. I'm there for your kids' gain, yeah. their kids' gain.
Right.
Because if we're not there fighting for our industry, there's somebody on the side fighting for theirs.
Yep.
And your voice won't be heard.
Absolutely.
So, very well
so
said.
That is why I do it. I got into it by getting to know the staff originally and getting to know some people that were already doing it. Mm-hmm. And they would say, yeah, if you got time, do it. The first couple of times I was asked, I said, I can't do it yet. I cannot yeah. get away mm-hmm. enough to right. feel like I can do anything. Yeah, I could have made a couple board meetings a year. That's all we really have to make. But if you want to be involved, you need to travel some.
Yep.
You need
right.
to get out, yep. travel a little bit amongst the state, make some trips to Washington, truly advocate for your
right.
for your industry. So once I got available to do that, you know, I finally told them I would, got elected to the board, made my way through executive committee, made it up to president. And I think I've been, I will be Washington 3 times last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we'll do it again a couple more times this year.
Right. Yeah. Cause you just got back from yeah, Washington.
Yeah. Just up there. We were up there doing some leadership group through National Corn Growers Association, mm-hmm. myself and another grower member that's mm-hmm. on the board. And we got to make our congressional visits, you know, go see mm-hmm. go to Capitol Hill.
Yep.
I think everybody needs to go there and see that and make an effort to do it, to walk those halls, see that building. Cause even if you don't respect some of the people that are there, mm-hmm. your opinion will change of the institution once
right.
you're there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's more of a respect for the institution and the way it
yep.
works.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. When you get to walk on those marble steps that are worn as deep as they are,
right.
yeah.
And think
yeah.
about all the people that have crossed that up there yep. working, it shows you that you're definitely not a loud voice and you ain't there very often.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because that's you didn't
right.
call us all that way.
That's right.
You're one little bitty tiny part of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was really amazed, probably the first times I started going, as how many organizations are represented up there.
Yep.
And how many people are there advocating for something every day.
Yep. That doesn't have anything to do with agriculture.
Oh, no. It has yeah, nothing to do with us. Yeah. It's every organization, every industry, every facet yeah. of business. And they got office buildings full of people.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think about how many we have there total in ag, from Farm Bureau to corn, soy, wheat, mm-hmm. And just a few other small organizations. Like we're not very largely represented mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. part of the world. Yes, when we do go, we have a pretty big appearance because we can get so well aligned.
Yep.
And we have good grassroots efforts. Mm-hmm. That's the best part is we don't have a big membership in Kentucky in the Corn Growers Association, but when we want to motivate people to work, we can reach almost all of them.
Yep.
That's
right.
the good thing, and they'll get motivated to do something.
Yep.
And we're not we're not there typically ever asking for something that just affects one person.
Yep.
It's there as a whole. Yep. And it might even be that we're helping another state. Right. You know, something that's an issue just that we could foresee being a problem for us. Well, let's get in front of it.
Yeah.
Yep. We can get real specific, but there's no need in it because it's you can get in the weeds real quick.
Yeah.
But that is how I kind of got drawn into it and why I do it. And I will continue to serve. I think I got another year as president, but I'll continue to help when I can, even after that, because once you get involved, you create, just like what we were talking about earlier, you create that relationship.
Right.
And you got to help the next guy make sure he continues that relationship.
Yep.
You can't just cut it off and say, I'm done. Yep. I can't go back. Cause then it's like starting all over again.
Yeah. It's like the chain's broken.
Correct. So it's important to have those people that are there to kindle the relationship with the next guy that's going to following and stay involved. Yep. And you still learn from all those that I learned more from the guys that done it before me, just watching them than I probably learned doing it.
Yep.
And then you got to help. You got to put out the same vision for the next person. Yep. And everybody will do a little different.
Yep.
But I don't have a lot of time to give. And I sometimes I feel guilty because I take time from my family to go do this stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it has been really neat watching my son get interested in what I'm doing because he wants to go to Washington with me now, and he's seven.
Yeah.
When that's I was great, seven, though. I kind of knew it existed.
Mm-hmm.
but he, I just explained to him, you know, this is the building where we make the laws, and that's the easiest way I know to explain it is the laws and rules we have to follow. This is where they come from.
Right.
And so he wants to go see it. And I said, when you get a little older, I'll take you, and you can go sit with me in the offices and see it, and maybe he'll appreciate it and kind of care about it too. Well, he may not. I don't know. I can't force that upon anybody. Right. But if we're not working, because my whole goal is doing it for my kids and everybody else's, because I want there's no better place to raise a kid than on a farm. I've never found
that is right.
I've traveled the world a little bit, and I still never found any place in the world better to raise a kid than on a farm.
Yep.
Especially a well-run one that is safe.
Yeah,
and because the farms we were raised on were not safe. I can tell you right now.
Lucky to be here.
I mean, I could tell you several times that somebody probably should have died.
Absolutely.
And we all have those stories.
Yeah.
So we do primarily because of my wife. Ours is very much safer than it probably would have been.
Yes. but
for us to have the crew we have around, they're very much mindful of the safety and the kids, and we are pretty strict on when they can be around. There's sometimes a lot's just too full of equipment, and when they just can't, you know, we won't take that risk.
Yeah.
But to be able to take a kid out and do all the things we do, like we had a bunch of seed coming in yesterday. Well, the night before, me and the kids were out in the building just cleaning the floor and moving stuff around, and they were out there with me.
Yeah,
you know, it's there's nothing better than be able to take them out there and do that.
And
we want to make sure that continues. How many kids can we make continue for? I don't know. It's less and less every year. But for everyone that we can make it good for, it's worth the battle.
And we're such an important industry. You know, when you think about it, you know, and like you were talking about, no, we're not very many in numbers.
Yep.
But we're a very important industry. I mean, you know, you got to eat, or you want to eat, or you want to got to eat.
Right.
You know, however you want to look at
it.
Yeah. But, you know, it's so important. And you were talking about the relationships, and I just want to touch on that. That is so important because – when you call somebody, you want them to recognize who you are and the importance that you have in the ag community, and they say, hey, I need to listen to what this guy's saying.
Yep.
And, you know, we all appreciate everything that y'all do. And those relationships that y'all work on and build are so important to agriculture. And, I mean, it's just if we didn't have those relationships, we'd be really in trouble.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, for every time we enter an office, you know, there was somebody there probably an hour before us asking for the opposite.
That's right. That's something I think that's really good for our kids to see, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because we tend to see what's in our world.
Oh, yeah. We are very bad at it.
We are. Yeah. We do. I mean, and that's just human nature, but we see what's in our world. And sometimes we don't really realize what's going out outside of our bubble. And to be able to see that you're walking in and, you know, trying to battle what the person before you, you know, was trying to do. And to see that. You can get
blinders on pretty quick.
You can.
Yeah,
really.
You can.
As an organization, we were we as farmers, you know, our boards are made up of farmers, right? Bankers' right. boards are made up of bankers. You know, yeah. it yeah. all tends to be their own right. people. And everybody wants to look at what's made, they think's best for them, but they don't look at how it affects the outside or how other right. people see it from the outside. The state fair is one that we always look at. A lot of farmers are like, do we really want, you know, the big ag land exhibit that's at state fair? Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of farmers don't necessarily see that because a lot of farmers don't attend state fair, right?
Right.
Right.
But if you think about the people that walk through those doors, those are the ones, if you asked anybody in ag right now, what's one of our biggest problems is educating non-ag consumers, right? Yep.
So far removed from the farm.
Yeah. Well, I think, to me, blinders on, well, I don't go there. I don't see it. It's not worth anything, right? But the people that are walking through there are the ones you're wanting to reach the worst.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so absolutely. Those are the things that and there's going to be some changes up there again this year, even from our organization, to try and even do better.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we want to do more because those are the people we really need to reach.
Yeah.
And the kids. Yeah. You know, we need to get them when they're young.
Because educating the ag kids in the ag counties, yeah, that's good. But like half of them are.
Yeah, they're going to get that.
Anyway. It's all those others that we want to reach to try and educate about these carbon issues and the food mm-hmm. security and whether or not it's organic or not or GMO. And just and you don't even have to give them an opinion. Mm-hmm. Just put facts in front of them. They'll make their own.
Yep. Exactly. You know, I mean,
don't force propaganda.
That's right.
Put facts out. Let them make their own opinions.
There's enough of that.
Other people. And on the other side, a lot of times there's lots of propaganda and lots of things that are not necessarily true. And I feel like that if we portray the truth to folks and do the best job that we can in educating people, you know, we say it on this podcast all the time, you know, that we want to educate people.
That's right.
We want to tell our side of the story and folks like you that are telling your story. Because if you don't tell your story, there's somebody that's going to be telling it and it may not be true. So we want to do a good job telling our story. So, I mean, it's just, we can't, we mention it a lot on this program, but we just can't hardly say it enough.
And that's really one of the reasons we started this podcast was because we wanted to reach people, because you have to reach people differently now. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, there's no more can you have a meeting and everybody just come because that's what everybody used to do. Yeah,
don't work that way.
It doesn't work that way. No. It does not work that way.
Life's too busy.
It is. Yeah, and so, you know, we have to, those of us that are in the business of education and trying to get words out, we have to adapt to new ways of doing things, just like you farmers have to adapt to new ways of farming to be able to continue to do what you do. And that's really the driving force behind why we started this podcast, as a way to reach other people and to advocate for agriculture. I mean, that's, you know, because that's what we have to do, and being able to get folks like you on here and you know, that helps us do that.
That's a plus of the job, by the way, to get to talk to real farmers.
Yes, it is.
You know, it really is a plus for our program to be able to talk to people that are really involved. And we're involved in agriculture. I don't want people to think that, but it's the people that are boots on the ground folks we'd really like to talk to.
There's two different things. There's agriculture. There's farming.
Farming
is absolutely a part of agriculture, but there's a lot of agriculture. Yeah. A lot of people work in the agricultural field that are so removed from farming, don't really know what it takes to put food into that production practice.
Yep.
That's one thing I've learned through advocacy is just because a staff, you know, it doesn't really matter if it's ag or homeowners. You know, if you have the people that are really involved in the situation, not somebody that's being paid to be there, and all of the staffers, whether it's within the state and those congressmen and legislators that live and work in your state, or those that are positioned in Washington, or it's at a staff office, they want to hear from you as a constituent that is actually involved with what's going on and what the problem is, not what he said, she said.
Yes.
Right.
You know, exactly. And telling the story second or third. They want to be able to relate to you and your family and your kids and why. And that's way more important, because once you make that connection, they remember it.
Yep.
They don't remember you fussing about. They remember you fussing about somebody, but they don't care as much.
Right.
Yeah.
And they've all told us it's that, make that personal relation.
Yep.
And then it gets into storytelling. Mm-hmm. You have to learn how to tell your story.
That's right.
Yep. And it means something.
Yep.
They seek you out, too.
Yes, once they figure out.
Once they build that relationship and something comes across their desk, you're going to be a person that they're going to call and say, hey, what do
he
you think about this?
He was in my office talking about something corn-related. Yep. You know, I'll just call
him. I'm going to call him and see what they think about this. How would this affect him on his farm?
Yep. I mean, we just had that experience in Washington a couple weeks ago. It was a certain member of Congress was wanting to do something, but the staffer wasn't real informed on it, and they wanted us to give them the info on it. It's so like you were just educating them.
Yes.
And then they could educate the next one. I was like, we may not have any luck in that office changing anything, but that staffer might educate another staffer, and their representative have more power, or they might be on the right committee. Because people don't understand how few of people get to start or stop a bill when it really comes down to it.
Right.
And when you get down to committee, what that one person can stop this from coming up.
Yep.
And this is works on the same on that. On the state levels, it does the federal level. That process is the same.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times when you're meeting with those folks, you know, when you ask them about a certain thing, they'll turn to their staffer and say, where are we at on this?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Just because you don't get to talk directly to a congressman, congresswoman, or a state representative or something, that doesn't mean anything. Those staffers are the ones that inform them of what's going on.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. We joke in Washington that the whole place is run by 24-year-olds. If you've ever been there and you walk through, you don't see. You have the Congress people, and then you have the members, and then you have all these young people running the place.
And they're busy.
That's right.
They're really on the go all the time.
Yeah, there's a reason they're carrying a couple cell phones and a stack full of papers.
Yes.
It's funny.
And to build those relationships and to be able to build those relationships with those folks is very important too. So, I mean, you've got a multitude of people that you've got to build relationships with, and that's why you go up there as much as you do to try to build those relationships with those folks.
That's right.
And you'll meet a freshman staffer or a new staffer that you think, oh, they won't be here very long, but they might be working for some other state in a few years, and they're back in your world again.
Yeah.
So you don't ever want to discard one or be rude or put them off because you never know where they're going to show back up next.
And
they might be chief of staff for so-and-so tomorrow.
That's right.
Yeah.
So
that's very true.
It's a big, long list of contacts, but it's important to keep it up. And
I think one of the things that you said, too, that I just want to reiterate is, you know, they ask you a couple of times to serve before you said yes, because you knew you at that time in your life, you could not devote the time that it needed. Mm-hmm. And that's important, because I think it's as important as it is to say yes to step up into leadership roles. It's also just as important to know when the right answer is no. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe not no ever, but no right now.
Because you can step up pretty quick. I mean, if you're interested.
Yeah, I mean, if you really choose to push, you can do that.
You
can do it. And you can step up really quick and not do anything.
And that's what you don't need.
And that's what you don't want.
You don't want that. Nobody needs that. No. And
agriculture doesn't need that.
No. And I think it's very – I just wanted to reiterate how important that is, because I want to make sure that's heard. because it's okay to say no.
Yeah.
If you're not ready. And it's – because you have to be willing – you have to be ready when you're willing to step into that role, because it is going to take extra time. It's going to take time away from your family. It's going to take you away from the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You're going to have to make adjustments for a few years there.
Oh yeah.
When you're in that role. And so you have to be dedicated to doing that and know when the time is right.
Well, and understand the costs that go along with it. A lot of people don't realize when they say yes to when they're asked to serve in those positions, just what they're going to have to give up to be able to do that, because it takes a lot of sacrifices at home to be able to follow through on those.
I wonder if I could get my son to consult with me before he said yes to all these leadership programs that he's been. if I could say, Dad, you need to take care of the cows over here on this farm.
That's how it works.
I was like, oh boy.
Well, but you
wish I'd have known that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what David is saying is that when you step into these roles, you need to make sure you got somebody back at home that can take the reins when you're not there.
That's what it took for me is I knew I didn't have, for as much as we were already doing and the pace we were growing at and the things we were getting into, I knew I didn't have enough people in the right places for me to be gone very much.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't – unless it's somewhat important, I don't go. I don't just go to a meeting. It's like, I can't. I don't have time.
Yeah.
And it's just like tomorrow, I got to travel for a meeting on sustainable aviation fuel and things like that. So I try to pick out, I pick my battles that are important.
Sure.
Right.
And I don't go for a free meal, or I don't go just to go to travel, because you think, oh, I'll go to such and such and I get to see. Well, if you're in meetings and you're busy the whole time, you're not doing anything anyway.
Right.
No. You'd been best as well off being your back door because it's not any difference.
Right.
And I'm going to hurry in and hurry out of Commodity Classic this year just because my schedule's so full. I got other things to do between the farm and home and kids. I'm coming home early to try to spend time with kids over the weekend because I got something busy to do the next week. I have to weigh that out, and some people might think that's selfish, but I'm sorry, it just is what it is, and that's what I got to do.
Yeah. I think that's called time management.
It gets harder and harder to do, as everybody knows, as kids are doing more. My kids are young, so it makes it tough. But they don't really understand why I'm always leaving. But it's neat to see them be interested in why I'm leaving. So at least they aren't just holding it against me. Hopefully,
that's right.
Well, hopefully you're raising the next generation.
That's the plan. That's the goal.
Absolutely.
And I won't. No force for them. I don't care if they farm or not. I'd love for them too, right? Sure. I mean, that's my goal. But at least I'll know they were raised in a good environment and they had opportunity to do what they wanted. I tell everybody at the farm, I said, I'll know I've made it when I can walk up and light a fire and leave and it gets took care of. That's my goal. That's where I want to get to in life. And I was joking the other day. I told my brother, I said, I'm going to go buy me an old 1916 combine. I'm gonna have it remodeled and built just like new. In a couple years here, me and my sons are gonna harvest by ourselves all fall, we won't see y'all no more.
We'll
buy you all new stuff, and y'all have fun. And just continue, and just we'll see you at the end of the day.
That's
exactly right. That'd be nice.
Oh yeah, it would be. It'd be slower pace, and not have all the headaches. But I don't know if I'll get that lucky or not. Yep. But we'll give it a shot.
Maybe one of these days.
Maybe one day.
Everybody's got to have a goal.
That's right. You got to have goals. Sometimes you don't set them big enough, so you got to make new ones.
That's right. Exactly.
You know, Josh, one of the things we always do towards the end of the show is we like to wrap things up with a timely tip, whether it's, pertinent to the time of the year that it is, or just something that people ought to be looking at and investing time into throughout the year. But thinking about the fact that this show is running the first week of April right now, we know what all is going on around us. We think it's a good time to remind everybody that's out on the road, farmers and private motorists alike, that watch out for that slow-moving equipment, giving them wide berth. Just pay attention to the roads and what's going on around you. We want to make sure everybody has a safe spring planting season. We want to make sure everybody gets home safe at the end of the day. And look at this equipment. Remember how big it is, how it does not stop on a dime. Remember the fact that it needs wide areas to turn and can't just pull off every time you want to come past it. That we feel like it's a good thing to remind folks of this time of the year.
Yeah, we don't want to be on the road any more than you want us on the road, I promise you. Yeah. We want to get off the road as fast and as quick as possible.
Believe it or not, farmers do not pick that worst opportune time of the day when you're trying to get to work to be out on the road.
Believe it or not, we move a lot of them at nighttime late to avoid it.
Just to avoid the traffic, stay out of rush hour.
We will try to do everything we can to avoid rush hour traffic.
I know a lot of people anymore that at the end of the day that they're moving that equipment later at night, they're starting off fresh somewhere else the next morning.
We do it a lot.
So, folks just need to get off their cell phone, slow down a little bit, and pay attention.
Turn the radio down.
Yeah, pay attention.
Unless they're listening to this podcast, they might can leave it on.
I don't know how many we meet that the flagger vehicle in front of the wide implement will voice back and say they're on their cell phone, not paying attention. Watch out. Go ahead and try to move because they're not going to see you. That happens. It's probably 20-30% of the vehicles that they're just not paying attention. Yeah.
Wow. That's scary.
Yeah, happens a lot.
Slow down. Pay attention.
That's right.
Well, Josh, we want to thank you for being with us this week. Thank you for this week's information. And thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show and will make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.